Hey friends, before we dive into this episode, I just put together a brand new guide to help you start and build your web design business. For those of you who are early stagers, whether you're just starting or whether you're just having trouble getting your business off the ground, this free guide is a 10-step action plan that is a proven path to building your business successfully. We're going to cover things like what to offer and what services to provide your clients as a web designer, how to price those, and I'm even going to share some of my top tips for starting to get paying clients. I'm also going to share with you the things you need to know as a web designer to be able to charge accordingly. So you can pick up this free guide at joshhall.co/build. Again, it's a 10-step action plan. It is a proven path to starting your web design business successfully. It is definitely what I wish I had when I got started. So I'm really excited to share it with you. Pick it up today for completely free. joshhall.co/build. I'm excited to help you start and build your business.
To get my first few clients, I went on Fiverr, and instead of offering standard web design services, I sort of flipped it around, and then I offered conversion rate optimization reports. So it was basically like a 2 to 3 page PDF with suggestions on how to improve your website. And then I really aimed to over deliver, and then I would make my suggestions and everything, give it, and then upsell them to a $100 wireframe. Which is like a I just only knew PowerPoint back then. So just like a very basic sort of sketch. And then after that, it will be like $1,000 website. And then after that, it will be $1,000 monthly marketing retainer. And yeah, it worked pretty well.
Welcome to the Web Design Business Podcast with your host, Josh Hall, helping you build a web design business that gives you freedom and a lifestyle you love.
Hey friends, great to have you here for another episode of the Web Design Business Podcast. This is going to be a cool one because we're going to dive into a value ladder for web designers, a proven value ladder at that. This stemmed from the idea of, well, particularly those of you who might be getting started in web design, although this can translate to anyone, no matter where you are in your journey in web design, but I'm sure everyone's had the question, should I have like an entry point product or something cheap or even free at the beginning of my value ladder? If you're new into web design or into business in general, you may wonder what this term value ladder is. It essentially means that you're going to give something either free or very low cost initially, and then you're going to move somebody up to something that's a little more expensive, then eventually, in the case of web design, a full web design build and ongoing work. But the question is, what would we put in this first level of the value ladder? Is it an audit? Is it a consultation? Is it like a free Loom video? What could you do in this beginning stage? That's exactly what we're going to dive into in this episode. Kyle Prinsloh, my guest in this one, had a really cool journey into web design, and more specifically, a really cool way that he got started in web design. And it was this approach of a value ladder for web designers. So he's going to share everything he learned and everything he implemented in offering this really cool value ladder approach. And we dive into a wide variety of topics in and around this idea of getting started in web design nowadays, particularly on the freelance side of things. Before you build an official business and scale, what's it like early on freelancing and getting going? So we're going to dive into that and much more in this one with Kyle Prinsloh, who is the owner and founder of Freelance Fam. Freelance Fam is a community for web designers, specifically for freelancers. You can check that out at freelancefam.com. It is a free Discord community, so highly recommend checking it out. Whether you are brand spanking new in web design or you're further along but are still in the freelancer role in your business, really great option to connect with others who are right where you are in your web design journey. So go again to freelancefam.com to check that out. Kyle also has a personal site and an agency site that we're going to reference. Both of those will be linked in the show notes at this episode, which you can find at joshhall.co/318. We're on 318, right, on this one? Yeah, 318, to go find all the links and resources we talk about. And again, freelancefam.com is to join his free Discord community. Did I mention it's free? Well, it is. Speaking of free, what should you do in the first level of your value ladder? Should it be paid? Should it be free? Find out more here with Kyle Prinsloh. Kyle, good to have you here, man. So pumped to chat with you specifically about freelancing and kind of what you're seeing in the world of trends with freelancers and web designers getting into freelance and solopreneurship. So I'm super pumped to chat with you, man. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, first of all, I'm a bit depressed. When you said you wanted to only talk about freelancing, I was hoping we could talk about like tennis or golf, but yeah, let's do it. But I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
I have zero to give you on golf, but I would love to talk tennis with you. So absolutely.
Oh, nice. We can let's start with this. Who's your favorite player?
Being from the States, I got into tennis when Roddick was at his prime. So he had just won the US Open when I got into tennis. So I played for high school 1 year. I graduated in 2005 when I graduated from high school. And I had no interest or experience with tennis leading up to that, but some of my friends started playing and then I just enjoyed it. And then I started watching it. And then I got a PS2 tennis game, like a PlayStation game. Yeah, and that actually really helped the timing. And then I was just hooked from there. So within a year I was playing for my high school tennis team. I was playing in doubles. So I'll give it to Roddick. But there's some guys right now on the tour. I love Tiafo right now. He's obviously a fun guy to watch. Yeah, I got to choose the Americans. I can't not choose the Americans.
Okay. Awesome. We can continue the chat.
Well, hold on. Wait about you. I got to reciprocate. What about you? Who's your favorite?
I like sort of the usual guys, you know, Federer, Nadal. I do like Sinner. I do like Alcaraz. So I would say mainly those guys at the moment.
Okay. Cool. All right. We're on the same page. All right. So we both love tennis. We both love web design. Can you just give us the summary of your experience, Kyle, with your journey? I mean, it sounds like you were freelancer, agency owner, scaler. I'd love to know just like how you got into web design and then what led you here.
Yeah. So there's a long answer and short answer. I'm going to give you the short answer. So I was working as a marketing manager for a company and I wasn't earning enough. So I had to try and figure out something on the side and that led me to freelancing. Within a year, I was actually earning more than my full-time salary. This was about 2015. And then I left in 2017 to do my own thing. And I've been full-time ever since. And that led to various different businesses, you know, dropshipping, software, all of this type of stuff. But at the moment, I still do freelancing. It's still a big part of my income. And I also do some like content, you know, where I've got a community, got like, you know, the usual stuff like a YouTube and social media and all of that, because I really enjoy helping others get into this space as well, because it really changed my life. And I enjoy sort of sharing what worked for me. And it's amazing seeing, you know, the fruit of that.
When you came into web design, you said you were in marketing previous to that. How did that go for you? Like, were you a tech guy? Were you good with development and coding, or were you purely design and front end? What was your marketing experience more specifically?
Yeah. So from a development side, nothing at all. from a marketing side, that's where I had more experience, like, SEO, sort of the basic web design stuff, social media, Google ads, online ads, things like that.
So this is really important, Kyle, because I feel like a lot of marketers or people who come from the marketing world and any category of marketing, they're often intimidated to be a web designer, because even with the rise of builders and options now for different website platforms, I think there's still a lot of hesitation and fear to be a web designer, because inevitably you're going to get into some hairy stuff with hosting and code. And even if you use a non-code builder or a platform, there's still going to be, you know, some web design stuff. How did you manage that? Like, what was your experience when you started freelancing? Did you have partners and colleagues who helped out with that stuff? Or did you just learn as much as you could when things got hairy? What did that look like?
Yeah, it was messy. It was actually emotional. You didn't want to see it. I sort of just had to outsource it because I didn't have it in me to learn all of these hectic things, you know. And I got a bit better, I would say, on a few technical things now, like maybe some hosting issues and everything. I've sort of figured it out a bit now. But in the beginning stages, I used to outsource a lot. You know, find some guys on Fiverr, pay them $5, tell them my issue and like, you know, hey, just fix it. And then I would focus on other stuff. So yeah, I know a lot of guys are sort of, you know, want to sort of figure it out themselves. And I do that, but not in things like this. So I just outsourced all of that.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I feel like outsourcing is usually a later stage of the game. So it's interesting that you dove right into it. But honestly, I think it's one of the best ways to go, especially if you know your zone of genius and you know what you're good at and what you want to focus on. Yeah, outsource the rest. I think it's good to have an overall general knowledge of some of the most important things. But if you're not interested in like CSS and hard coding things, yeah, have somebody who's really good at that do that. And then you can do the marketing or the sales that they may not be good at. How did you decide what builder to use? You said 2017 is when you started freelancing, right?
Yeah. So actually back then I went the old school route. I just went like standard HTML, CSS, bit of Bootstrap. Mm-hmm. And I went that route. And my approach was very much like I needed cash ASAP and I couldn't afford to wait like 3 months or 6 months or a year to learn and then start getting clients. So literally I remember taking like these courses on Udemy on Bootstrap. I learned how to center a div. I got back to the header section. I'm like, I sort of know how it works. The menu, okay, boom. Let me pitch my services. You know, website design. So that's essentially what I did. And then I learned on the job, doing like Bootstrap templates, the basics. You know, sort of like not advanced dynamic websites, right? But as I grew and it was clients, you know, who wanted like e-commerce, a bit more dynamic CMS websites. Then WordPress and WooCommerce back then. Mm-hmm. And that changed over the years to like 2019, 2020 around there to like other ones. I think it was Webflow, like 2021 around there. And then I used that for a while. And then now I'm using Wix Studio. And I know there's plenty of others. I'm also experimenting with others, but I'm set on Wix Studio at the moment.
That's what's so fascinating. There are just so many tools now. I followed a similar path to you that led me from hard coding with Dreamweaver, which was, I got into it back in 2010.
Oh yeah, so I actually used that as well. I forgot. Sorry.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you were just, you know, a handful of years behind me, but same progression, which I still think there's a lot of value in just knowing basic HTML structure and very basic CSS. Because if you're going to build a website, even if you're using a no code builder or platform, there's still HTML and CSS going on in the background. Yeah. And it's nice to know. It'd be like working on a car, you know, like with the hood down, like you don't really know what's going on. So that's really cool because I think that's a lot of marketers' hesitations to web design is like, oh, how far do I need to get in the code thing? Know a little bit and then find your tool. So you went hard coding, Dreamweaver, WordPress, and then Webflow, and then Wix Studio now, which I recently had Brad Hussey, who's a colleague of mine, who's all in on Wix Studio now. So that's kind of interesting because, you know, for years I used to dog Wix in the early days just because I had clients using it. And the old builder was, from my understanding, Wix Studio is a lot different than Wix, the old builder, right? Aren't they like two different platforms?
Yeah, big time. So, I think just like every other platform, you know, there's pros and cons in terms of like the early phases and everything. And I think I didn't use Wix back then. I preferred Webflow, right? Now, if I look at Wix Studio and Wix, there's quite a big difference. So Wix is more catered to like DIY, sort of like, you know, the average people who want to do websites themselves. Wix Studio is more focused on like professional freelancers, agencies, you know, want to like manage their clients, do like solid and no code, you know, websites with all these animations and everything, as well as using custom code. There's like a lot of all these technical things like Velo and custom CSS and all of these things. So it's really, I would say, customizable. And I must say, I've chatted with a lot of people who use it and often I recommend it. And I think there's only one guy who told me he's like, nah, I don't like it. And that happens. That's normal. But I'm talking about so many people who actually love it. So I think it's one of those things where you should try and you should try all of them. You know, I would say try the top three and see which one you prefer and then go with that.
Yeah, I stand by that too, man. There's really, I don't ever feel there's a right or wrong choice. There may be a right or wrong choice for you, but not as a whole. Like I still love Divi. It's what I'm comfortable with and familiar with. And I know some people hate it and that's fine. Like that. And I'm sure you've seen this with your community. So you run Freelancer Fam. Is that an agnostic group as far as builders? Like, do you have people who are using all sorts of builders and different tools or do you focus on Wix Studio with that?
Yeah. So it's called Freelance Fam. There's first of all, I must say it's really cool seeing the different opinions and what people are using, their backgrounds, all of that stuff. But to answer your question, people are using all sorts of different tools. You know, some people prefer code, some people prefer Webflow, some people prefer Wix Studio, some people prefer Framer, WordPress, and all of that stuff. So it's very mixed, and I think it's quite cool to get those diverse opinions on. Because the reality is, sometimes depending on the project, it is beneficial to use certain platforms, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's always nice getting different opinions.
When you started freelancing and you tried out WordPress and then you went to Webflow, what was it like going into different communities completely? Because every one of these platforms have their own communities. There's not too many people who are doing WordPress sites and doing Wix sites and doing Webflow. It's typically like, if you're in Webflow, you're in the Webflow community. You're in WordPress, you're in the WordPress community. There's you know, there's so much to do often with one platform to keep up with. So I would generally recommend like not doing more than two or three at most, because then it's like, it's really hard to hire too if you're using eight different platforms, and then you need to find a designer who can do eight different platforms. But what was it like for you almost going through different communities? Were you involved with the communities, or were you just kind of a lone wolf using the builders? What was your experience?
So I'm actually ashamed to say, but I actually didn't join any communities. I actually can't think of any communities before sort of my own that stands out. I do agree. I think it's more like almost like a cult in a way, on these different communities and different platforms. I think it's okay. It helps for support and all of that. Sadly, I don't have a better answer to give you, because I wasn't in many communities.
What about now with Wix Studio? Is there a community behind that?
So I'm a part of quite a few different Discord communities, Circle communities. Like you mentioned Brad Hussey, I'm a part of his community, Creative Crew. I'm a part of, I'm mainly in my one. And then I've got quite a few different Discords that I'm a part of, like the Merge community by Adrian Twarog. There's a guy named Flynn Blackie, I think it's called X Lounge, and a couple of others. Also mainly, I would say Wix Studio sort of communities, because that's sort of what I'm sort of focused on now. And then just some like general like business and marketing communities.
Gotcha. So I want to turn it over to when you got started, Kyle. Like the I think one overwhelming aspect of getting going freelancing, especially if you're used to being a employee somewhere, is, there's a couple of different challenges. Initially, there's becoming a business owner. And even if you're a freelancer, you are a business owner. You're just, running your own job, but then also figuring out what you're going to do and what you're going to offer. I actually would love to hear from you, coming from the marketing end of things. Like, did you lead with marketing services and then add websites as kind of like part of the package, or were you a web designer who also did marketing? What did it look like when you figured out your offers?
Yeah, that's a good question. It was sort of both. So I used to pitch it as a website as like a once-off service, and then marketing is ongoing, because I sort of said like, you can have the best website, but without, the marketing, it's sort of, it's going to do nothing, right? So to get my first few clients, I went on Fiverr, and instead of offering standard web design services, I sort of flipped it around, and then I offered conversion rate optimization reports. So it was basically like a 2 to 3 page PDF with suggestions on how to improve your website. And then I really aimed to over deliver. And then I would make my suggestions and everything, give it, and then upsell them to a $100 wireframe, which is like I just only knew PowerPoint back then. So just like a very basic sort of sketch. And then after that, it will be like a $1,000 website. And then after that, it will be a $1,000 monthly marketing retainer. And it worked pretty well.
Oh, that's awesome. What a great little outline there, that service progression. So lead gen, or the low ticket offer, was a conversion rate audit. Did you say that was paid or was that free? Was that the $100?
Yeah.
Oh, it was a $5 audit. Okay.
Yeah.
$5 audit. And then that brings it. Can you say that again? Where did the audit go from there?
Yeah, so it was a $5 audit, like a PDF document, and then it was a $100 wireframe on PowerPoint, and then a $1,000 website, and then a $1,000 marketing retainer, monthly marketing retainer.
Woo, that is a great little framework there, man. I think a lot of web designers need to think through that. I think for for your situation where you're getting clients online, that is one of the best approaches, because I was an in-person guy. I liked networking and meeting clients in Columbus, Ohio, which is a booming city. So I was able to meet a lot of people and go right into like $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 type websites. But if I were going online, I would be doing content and I would have a low ticket offer funnel type thing for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. For sure. Because you don't want to waste time with somebody who's got $200 and then you're spending an hour on a discovery call with them online where there's no like in-person connect, or you don't even know, like, you know, currencies are different too. I know you're in South Africa. Was that a thing for you too? Like, did you get clients locally or were you solely focused on clients online?
Mainly online to make use of like the dollars. So it's almost like in a way, it's almost like you in America, it's a bad example, but it's like, imagine you were getting pounds, right? So it's a bit more than the dollar. Whereas back then I can't remember the exact exchange rate all those years back, but it was much better than, you know, local currency rate. So it worked out much better.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a student, Richard, who's in the Czech Republic or Czechia now. And he's got a lot of clients from the US and the UK, just based off of being in Facebook groups and my community, Web Designer Pro, and some other groups. And oh my gosh, it's the way to go if you're in a spot where you want to get some, you know, clients in different currencies and stuff. So I love that framework.
And sorry, if I can jump in there. I mean, I've got some mates in the US. What they do is they, because obviously cost of living is higher there, right? So they would work on, even though they're American, they would get American clients, and then they would just travel the world and live in like Southeast Asia, where the cost of living is like a quarter of the US, and they will just keep profiting and then enjoying that sort of traveling lifestyle. And obviously it doesn't appeal to everyone, but I think this is the beauty of what we do as freelancers or agency owners. We can essentially create a lifestyle, a desired lifestyle around our business, you know, whereas a lot of businesses can't do that, you know? So yeah, I just wanted to emphasize that.
No, you're totally right. That is the beauty, especially I think a lot of remote jobs now, there are a lot of remote jobs after everything that happened through 2020 and the last few years, but there's not many remote jobs that you can be control of and have the freedom to do and like truly live wherever you want. That is really, really, really cool about web design. Mm-hmm. And you could even get clients locally and then bring them with you. If you get clients locally and then travel, then they're still your clients. It's, you know, there may be some local clients who prefer to have somebody they can physically meet with, but it's not going to be the case for everybody. And I don't know about your experience with this, but I found if clients find their web guy or gal, they are not quick to leave you. Or if they do, they're going to come back, because it is hard to find a web design freelancer, or solopreneur, or even like a trusted studio that kind of grows with you. I imagine you found that to be true since you're offering marketing, because you weren't just a one-stop shop, like build your website, peace. That's the way I ran it for far too many years. I just built websites and said, see you later. Then I realized I needed recurring income, which I want to ask you about next. But I imagine, having marketing as an aspect of your services kept your clients with you, like coming back.
Yeah. I would say most clients are actually with me for over... I would say majority are actually over 5 years now. I mean, even recently, like just about 6 months ago, my very first client from Fiverr, he just left me like last year, because he has to close down the business because he's emigrating and doing all these things. And I think it's a good sign. Like if you deliver good work and you make sure that your clients are getting results, why would they want to stop? You know, obviously there are certain exceptions to things, but generally speaking, I agree. They'll stay with you.
How did you do maintenance plans or hosting plans when you were doing WordPress to build any sort of recurring income?
I did not. I always wonder how it would have been if I did. And I know you've got, if I'm not mistaken, you've got a course on maintenance plans. So
you already be that course.
You'll be like the guy to ask. But generally on like the couple of clients that I handled with, you know, where they would pay like nothing. I think I started on like $20 a month or $30 a month. And then it's like, man, you know, they would call me on like a Saturday, my website's down and, you know, all of this stuff. And it's like, it's not worth it. But I know there is a right way to do it, you know, where you'll charge 100, 200, 300 plus, you know, a month, and you would structure it a bit differently. But I just, after those first few experiences, I'm like, nah, let me just focus on the bigger stuff, and I don't want to handle the small stuff.
No, that's fine. And I was just curious because you did go from kind of, you know, HTML, CSS to WordPress, which needs to be managed if clients are not managing it. Yeah, I mean, the shorthand of what I recommend in my course is that you have three different options, three tiers for hosting and maintenance. They all should be hosting and maintenance. You ideally want to handle the hosting. You're going to get the call anyway. You may as well get paid for it. So you have like a basic tier, and I'm just, not necessarily to you, Kyle, but anyone who's wondering how can I structure maintenance plans? Yeah, I have a whole course on it, but in short, the basic tier is just to cover hosting and just general website and plugin updates. Those are for the clients who are not going to update their site much, but you want to take care of them and keep them stay top of mind with them to keep them as a client. Middle tier is most of your clients who are going to have like ongoing updates. Maybe there's updates every quarter or every few months, something like that. You do basic optimization and things like that to keep their website secure and safe and going. And then I always recommend having a top tier for those like heavy duty clients who are really high touch e-commerce sites, membership sites, even advanced teams who are getting in and posting blogs and things like that. Having a top tier that maybe like 500 a month up from there. That's really the way to go with maintenance. But I'm kind of curious for you, when you switched over to Webflow, since you didn't have maintenance plans, I guess it would be a little bit easier because you're not going to do updates like you would with WordPress. Although, if anyone's curious and I want to turn this over to you, you can still offer care plans with Webflow, Wix Studio. Yeah, you're not going to be updating plugins, but you could still do optimization, copy work, SEO work, even accessibility stuff. Like you can still do a lot of ongoing work. Before I ask you about where recurring income is now for those builders, how did you handle going through different platforms with clients? Like, did you just keep on using WordPress for a lot of clients, or did you tell them like, hey, we're going to redesign the site in Webflow now, and then eventually Wix Studio? How did you go about that transition? Yeah. For your clients.
Yeah. I think the main transition actually came from WordPress. So I actually had someone on retainer just to handle all of these bugs and issues with WordPress, security issues, plugins updating, vulnerabilities, even having all of these plugins like WordFence, the premium version, all of these things, and it will still get hacked. And it's like, it's like, I don't want to deal with this stuff. So I just had someone on retainer to handle all of the different client websites. And then eventually it just got too much. And it's like, wow. So I just sort of told them like, look, this is what's happening. And I just said like, it's not our fault. We've tried everything. We've optimized it. We've latest updates, plugins, everything. And we're still getting hacked. And then I just said, look, if we move over to Wix Studio, this stuff is not going to happen. Moved over, nothing happened. So I just sort of convinced them to say like, look, we can't monitor it every single day to see if the website's down and all of this stuff. And just explain the value of it, you know, that that it'll basically pay for itself. Pretty quick. So
I hate to throw anyone under the bus, but what hosting company were you using?
Do you want me to mention it?
Oh yeah. Look, it is what it is. They need to get their shit together if they're getting hacked all the time.
So it was Bluehost and Xneva.
What a shocker. Yeah. I got hacked on Bluehost too.
Maybe you can blur those parts out. Like beep.
You're not sponsoring this show. Listen, I've talked about it. Like I left Bluehost. I got hacked, dude, while we were on our honeymoon. We were on our honeymoon, my wife and I. We get back, all excited, feeling fresh, feeling good, all tan from Mexico, ready to get going. And I log in and my site is blank. And I'm the web designer. And I had just talked to an agency about partnering up with me before our honeymoon. So the guy reached out and was like, hey, I like opened my email. And I was really good on our honeymoon. We did not use our phones, no email, no nothing. And I log in my email, excited to get back going. And first email I see, hey, I went to go to your website, but it's down. And then, sure enough, I got hacked. So eventually I made my way over to SiteGround, and I am very happy to say SiteGround has been amazing. I've had zero issues security wise. And I'm not even like, I don't even now use any advanced firewalls or anything. I just have good hosting with SiteGround, keep updates plugins updated, and, decent passwords, even not great passwords, decent. That's been enough. So anyway, I'm curious. I'm curious for you when you thought about like Webflow and eventually Wix Studio, Was the interest in those platforms because of the security issues and vulnerabilities with WordPress, or did you just like the building experience and the UX better?
I think the security aspect is important, but for me, it's the experience. You know, all the nice templates, you know, sort of the experience of like creating, you know, the websites and everything. So yeah, it's probably both, but definitely the experience is a big one.
So I'm seeing with a lot of my Web Designer Pro members, a lot of members, I'd say over half are still WordPress users because that's what I use in the world I come from. Well over half are still WordPress, but we're getting a lot more who are using Webflows, Showit, Wix Studio now. I know, like you said, it's really gaining popularity. Other builders that are self-hosted. From your perspective in your community, freelance, is it Freelancer Fam?
Freelance fam.
I want to make sure I got the URL right. Freelance fam. Sure. With them, like with your members in there, how are they building recurring income for those who are using builders like Wix Studio and self-hosted platforms? Apart from marketing services, are you seeing anyone doing any sort of recurring just website care kind of things?
Yeah, I would say if I have to sort of give a random guess, be like 10% doing like the web care packages. 90% is focusing on, you know, the recurring side of like, you've got your website, now let's, you know, get results from your website. And I think, you know, that's a big trend this year, the whole recurring income. And I think, I mean, I'm a big fan of it. That was something that I noticed from the beginning on freelancers. You know, they would say like, yeah, I just closed the 10K project. And it's like, okay, great. First of all, how long did it take you? And they say, okay, it took me 2 months. Okay, so effectively that's $5,000 a month. And then, okay, and then what do you have lined up for month three? It's like, oh no, I don't have a client yet. It's like, man, I don't like those ups and downs. So I just sort of went with, you know, the retainer package side, and that's what I recommend. Obviously, there's many ways to go about it. Some people prefer the once-off route, but I'm a fan of like, you know, the monthly side. And I think what I've noticed is people more offering the website as once-off, and then like, you know, marketing services ongoing, or there are guys who would sort of include it in one. So it's almost like so you would get a website and some care packages or marketing plan, and you would pay, let's say, for a website, maybe like $500 a month and or $500 to $1,000, and then it's a yearly plan. And then if you cancel, they treat it as like your like a Netflix subscription. So they would like you know, turn off your website.
One of my members, one of my rock star members of Web Designer Pro, you need to connect with him. His name's Steve Schramm. He is the king of subscription web design. It's subscriptionwebdesign.com. That's where you find him. It's that same. Oh, you should definitely connect with him for freelance fans.
Just making a note.
Especially for those self-hosted builders, which he's a WordPress guy too, but you could do it with self-hosted builders where you could make it a subscription. Like you could do 18 months. It includes the build, basic care, and marketing, whatever marketing services you want to do.
Yeah.
The thing that you hit on that's interesting and why I found we'll just call them care plans, because the term maintenance doesn't apply to like Wix Studio or something because it's self-hosted, but you can still do care. You can totally still care for a client's website. The thing that I found that's different, and you know this as a marketing guy, Kyle, like clients turn their marketing on and off. They will turn things on, turn things off, go up, go down, depending on how things are going. But if you could have recurring income that cannot be turned off, which is a care plan, that's where like the true bottom line wins happen. Because with WordPress, it's a necessity. So it's kind of a built-in, like you need to have a care plan. And if you don't, likely you're going to get hacked for clients. But even with these other platforms, like if you are the webmaster and you're doing the general care, and if a client has a question, they're on your care plan, even if it's like $20 a month or $30 a month, I mean, shoot, you get 100 of those and you can get up to 20 or 30K with $100 a month, you know, that, or whatever the numbers look like, you're still their person. And that's where like they can turn on and off the marketing and do add-ons to the website separately under like a marketing plan, but care plan is constant and consistent. That's how I view it with the difference of the different types of recurring income. Cause you could, like you mentioned, and I think there's a huge, huge opportunity for web designers to do as much or little marketing as they want to actually grow the business through the website. But at the core, for me personally, I think the core is build an awesome website and care for it month to month. And then whatever we do on top of that, that's, you know, up to whatever anyone wants to do. But that's still the core for me.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And this is the beauty of it. You know, you might find that that should be, let's say, 20 or 30% of your income. And then the other should be like 30% once off and then 30% recurring or whatever, right? But as you were speaking, I was reminded of this company in South Africa, massive hosting company, and they sort of focus on this care plan. I think their pricing now is, let's say, $15 or $20 a month, but they've got like 10,000 plus websites, you know, on their plan. So it's a massive company, you know, a lot of employees and everything. And they focus on like just the small stuff, you know. You pay your website, you pay your hosting, you might get like 30-minute support to update some stuff, and they just milk it, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's a good niche, good to focus on. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I think it's a good thing just to, even if you just earn a few hundred dollars a month, you know, there's still a few hundred dollars a month that you wouldn't have gotten for basically doing almost nothing.
Yeah, you could pay a car payment with a couple clients if you really wanted to. And for anyone who is nervous of doing WordPress updates or tied to the security, like kind of what you experienced, Kyle, I totally understand that. There are a ton of white label options now. Like, I'm partnered up with FocusWP. I have a colleague who runs that, joshhall.co/focus. If anyone wants to go check that out, because they'll give you a deal. You can literally hire their team as like your baseline. They'll do all the security, all the updates, and then you can just add on whatever you want per month. So if you pay them a couple hundred bucks a month, but then you're making, you know, $1,000 a month, that's $800 profit right there every month. Mm. So nice. Yeah, there's so many ways to go about it. But I think most importantly, to your point with the idea of marketing and having recurring services for clients, I think it's really dangerous to blend in care with marketing, because when clients turn off the marketing stuff, you know, recession's hitting a little bit, we're going to turn marketing off. You don't want them to cancel your care plan or their website. So that's where that's a little tricky. Yeah. So you're right. I mean, there's so many ways to go about it, but yeah, it's cool to see what you see work with your community specifically. Cause yeah, like there are so many ways to go about it, but I guess it's just kind of figuring out what works for you. And I guess what just like what you enjoy with your business too, right? Like that's one thing I've been really thinking about more now is like, what do you want to do? Like if you're an ads guy, so I imagine that's probably, you know, you're comfortable in that world. That is not my world. I have zero interest in looking at Facebook ads or any sort of ad. It's just not what fires me up. I don't enjoy it, but you can still do so many sorts of marketing with whatever you enjoy. At least that's what I've really tried to think about here recently.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things where it just gets clearer the longer you do something, you know. Like when I was starting out, like I didn't enjoy the coding side of it. You know, I could do it and I did it, but eventually I was like, nah. So then you just figure it out. Then you're like, okay, either I'm going to do it and it's going to make me unhappy, or I just outsource it and I focus on other things. And it's the same thing with, let's say, marketing stuff. You know, you might find that, you know, you don't enjoy SEO or you don't enjoy Facebook, but maybe you enjoy, let's say, content writing or the A/B split testing or CRO or email marketing or whatever. And again, circling back to what we were discussing earlier, you know, this is the beauty of what we do. We can create that lifestyle based on the business that we want. And that means that there are parts that we don't enjoy that we can outsource. Even in a business side, if we zoom out even more, you know, maybe it's operations. Maybe you do enjoy development side and coding from scratch or like the hardcore stuff. Then you might need someone to do operations or project management or sales or whatever to keep the engine running so that you can enjoy doing what you're doing, you know? Yeah. And you can't really tell your boss, you know, that you want to only focus on this on your jobs, you know? So again, it's a blessing that we get to do this.
And the idea of like a specialty that you enjoy, that's one thing I found recently with my community, Web Designer Pro. I actually, so I use Circle. Do you guys use Circle for Freelance Fam, or are you guys using something, or is that a Discord?
Yeah, we use Discord.
Okay. So I don't know what the profile fields are like there, but in Circle, you can create custom profile fields. And we just launched a field for pro specialties. So members can add Yeah, just that. Like, what are you specialized in? What do you enjoy working on? And that's been fascinating because we have members who are doing a lot of the same things, but there's just like a hyper niched specialty. Like Sam, one of my members loves local SEO, specifically local SEO. Like that's his bread and butter right now. And it's super specialized. And it's really helpful for me to know, like, if a member comes in and wants help with local SEO, Sam, and there's a few other people who are in a group together, local SEO. Now that's different than like broad SEO, and there's similarities, but if you go for like long phrase and long tail keywords, it's very different than local businesses using Google Workspace and stuff like that, or excuse me, Google Business Profile now. So yeah, that's what's so cool. Like, yeah, you just kind of, you got to, I think you have to experiment with a lot of different things and then find your lane. Would you back up that advice when you're getting started?
Yeah, man. I think starting out, from my perspective, I always recommend that people should try a bunch of things. So start out as a generalist and then maybe niche down as you go. But just to highlight your point, so actually, like literally earlier this month, we almost in March, but early in February, I had a client sort of issue in a way with Google Search Console. And there's this guy in my community, he just keeps posting Google Search Console stuff. So literally, I just hit him up, like, hey, man, here's the issue. Boom, boom, boom. We sorted it out in 2 days. And all sorted, you know. It's amazing. That is amazing. You know, when you just see all these posts of people sharing what they know, and it's like, ah, that's the guy. I remember he knows what he's doing, you know, and it applies to everything. So definitely agree with that.
Share what you know and share what you're fired up about. Like that's marketing in 2024. That's all it is. Yeah. You don't have to sell. You just, everyone is looking now for specialization. Especially in our world with collaborating and partnerships. And I mean, clients think about that too, but clients aren't necessarily looking for like Google Search Console, but they may look for web designer instead of a marketer, like a full-blown digital agency potentially. Both can work, but yeah, there's just so much value in just sharing what you know. And that's it. Like if you really want to sell and market easy, that's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah. And I was thinking about like on Twitter, right? Or X as we call it, like sharing what you know is obviously extremely important, and I agree with that. But there's one account that I really enjoy, and he shares some SEO advice. The name escapes me for now. But what's nice about it is this. So sharing what you know, but in a way which makes sense to describe your offer and your value. So what he would do is he would create like an example. So he would say, here's how I would do an SEO article on kitchen countertops. So it'd be like something like random, right? Or renovations, or like cameras or lighting or this. And it's one by one, almost every day, he would give like an outreach, you know, like an overview of like the title. Here's what I would do, the headings. Here's why I would do it, all in one picture. And then he would explain his information below. And over the course of many months, he's getting hundreds of likes on these tweets now. No doubt, many different customers and interested leads, purely because he's sharing what he knows in a way which makes sense. Or like, whoa, this guy's giving us the blueprint. He knows what he's talking about. And I think when it comes to, and that applies to every single service, you know, if you're doing website design, you can redesign existing common websites and give some suggestions. Or maybe you would create a website, let's say for Josh, and be like, hey, Josh, and tag him on social media. I've just made this for you. This is, you know, a sort of redesign of your website. I'm just speaking out loud, but that's sort of the approach that you want to, that you would want to do. And it's the same thing for like Google Ads. It's the same thing for copywriting. It's the same thing for X, Y, and Z. And I think that when you do that and you get out there and you share that on like, here's the before, here's after, or here's what I would do in this scenario, and you just keep sharing what you know in a way that highlights your offer and your value, man, you're onto a winning blueprint.
You're totally right. And that's, I mean, full circle, we're kind of going back to your original offer with your audit. Like that little $5 lead generator, you had a chance just to give a teaser of what you know, and then that brings in to the wireframe, you share even more, and it's kind of like the value ladder of knowledge, I guess, which is basically your exact approach on how you got clients with Fiverr. You share a little bit of what you know, and quick wins are really big too for clients. And I'm learning this more with my students too now, like really trying to get people quick wins to get them through the door. And then we move up kind of from there. Same thing for clients. Like if you give them one little tip on SEO or conversion or something like that, they're like, oh, that's a great idea, Kyle. Yeah. Would you look at like a whole site? And then, look at the whole site. Next thing you know, you got a $10,000 project probably and an ongoing client. I love that approach, man. I think that's a really, really great way to frame this.
Awesome. Yeah. And it also applies to leads, right? So it's one thing to keep your clients happy and, you know, to keep delivering work. But if you are in a position where you need clients, they start off as leads, or actually no one, and they start off as leads. You know, you need to make them leads in a way. And this approach also works, you know, in terms of like adding some value. So in a way, there's like a sleazy outreach approach where you would just send like the general, you know, like, hey, I can help you increase your, you know, turnover. Like, would you be interested? Like that sort of general blanket message. Or if you really go the extra mile, then which is what I would recommend highlighting and wrapping up this point is you would say something like, hey, Josh, I know you get a lot of these messages, but I recorded a 2-minute Loom video with my suggestions on how you can improve X, Y, and Z. I recently helped X, Y, and Z, you know, with this exact same thing. You know, hope it helps, you know, cheers. That sort of message is incredibly valuable. You send 50 of those, you're bound to get, and actually you will get replies and you will get a client from that versus sending 500 random messages. And it's the same thing or like over-delivering in a small part, and then that leads to many different things.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more, man. I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, when I was saying share what you know, that is almost like the first part, but then yes, you should definitely, if not on every post, you don't have to do it on every post, but every few posts have some sort of call to action. That's like, if you would like some help with this, hit me up here. Make it assertive enough to where people know that you're in for business and you're open for business and they can get started. Or better yet, if you have a little, like low end offer, that's $5, $10, $20, $30 or even $99, it's still a great little low end offer to get somebody through the door, especially for companies who are interested in looking for a trusted partner, like a web design partner, and they're going to spend $5, $10, $20K or something.
Yeah.
A lot of ways to get clients, man. As we get towards wrapping this up, I don't want to miss something I wanted to ask you about, which was pricing. Specifically pricing with these different platforms. Did you charge differently as a WordPress guy and then a Webflow guy and now a Wix Studio guy? Or has your pricing been pretty consistent through whatever platform you use?
And okay, so same with everything. It's been all over the show. I've tried everything, like fixed pricing, hourly pricing, value-based pricing, the subscription model pricing, you know. But if I have to say now, I would say it's a bit of fixed price it's a bit of value-based price, so like once off, and then the subscription pricing model where it will be like, yeah, for this website, I'll charge you X, and then I'll focus more on the monthly side. I should add, I am not interested in the 10, 20, 30K plus websites. I did do a 10K plus website in the past, and it was crazy. It was like way too much work, everything. And it's like, no ways. So my sweet spot is between 5 to 10. And my main focus would be getting them on a retainer, you know, between 1 to 3K a month a retainer. So that's sort of my sweet spot, and that's sort of what I focus on now.
What's in your retainers for the 1 to 3K month plans?
Let me actually open
this always fascinates me, especially from marketers, because this is where it's like, I mean, you could, as a marketing guy, gosh, you could add all sorts of things in there, but I'm wondering what's standard and what are good, you know, good options for, retainers that are 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 a month.
So it's generally, I actually only sort of start from nowadays. I only start from like 2, 2.5. But to give an idea, so I've got my pricing tiers on my website, Startup Starship. And the basic one is $2,500. That's for one article on page SEO and social media. Then you've got the premium one, which is 5K a month. And that is everything in, you know, the first package. Link building, additional article, maybe a Figma to a website landing page. And then the other one is like Wix Studio design. And then the other one is 10K a month. That includes Google Ads management, Facebook Ads management, more blogs, and a bit more website stuff. So that's sort of what I've sort of refined over the years. And some of it's a bit nuanced as well. Like some clients I do some email marketing, some clients I do A/B split testing. But that's sort of like the general focus that I'm focusing on now.
Gotcha. So it's a mix of web design, like on-site web design services, SEO content, and then reaching out into potential ads and kind of higher level marketing, it sounds like. Where was that at again, Kyle? Yeah. Was that at your Kyle Prinsloo website or?
Yeah. You can get all the links there actually. So it's kyleprinsloo.com. I've got my agency website and everything there as well.
Okay. What was the agency site where that pricing is?
Startup Starship.
Okay. Okay. I'll make sure we link that as well in case anyone wants to check that out. That's a cool name. Startup Starship.
Cool. Yeah. I actually asked ChatGPT for it.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. But maybe if I can circle back and say, like, there's a lot of agencies and freelancers who are charging 5-10K plus a month for some, even charging like, I think like 17 grand a month or something. So like massive amounts, just on one subscription plan. And when looking at this, I know, because this is what sort of got me thinking, what am I doing wrong at the beginning stages? Don't get despondent, because the reality is when I started on $200 a month for my sort of plans, and then it was like 500, and then it was 1,000, and so on. So it took a while. And honestly, I would say 90% of people that I speak to, when they start, ask them what their starting rates were. Ask them how much they charge for their first moves. Ask them how much they charge for their first marketing plan. And it's very rare that the guy will say 5K plus for his first website. It's very rare that he'll say 2K plus for his first marketing retainer. It does happen, but it's very rare. So yeah, I just want to encourage you to say, like, it's okay starting small. And I think that's actually the best way to start, because you get a lot of experience, you get a lot of confidence. You can see results, because now you're selling results. You're not selling, hey, I think I can do this, or, you know, and then the client asks you questions and everything. Now it's, you know exactly what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, the results you can get. Why? Because you can say, this is what I did for this client. If you don't want my service, no problem, but this is what I did for him, you know?
That's such a good point, man. I tell my members of Pro that all the time, because I still serve a lot of people in there who are new in the journey. And yeah, like, you could go through my business course, and my recommendation is to start at 2,500 if you are a beginner. But I understand that even sounds like a lot for somebody who's maybe just in web design for a couple months. So I've had members say, like, I actually went down and I charged like 500. I know I shouldn't have, but I was like, it's totally cool. Like, if that's your first project, I charged 300 for my first project.
Yeah. Well,
it's almost, as long as you set constraints and you're not going to lose money on a project or make a dollar per hour, as long as you set expectations, constraints, and limitations on a $500 project, that is totally fine to start with. Cause like you said, Kyle, you will build confidence that way. Instead of charging or estimating 2,500 and feeling like, am I worth even 250 right now? I'm brand new. It's going to be hard to sell. That client's going to sense that. And then most importantly, you may put overwhelming like pressure on yourself, unneeded pressure to, like, you know, you don't know if it's going to work. As long as you follow a framework and stuff, probably going to be worth it. But still, I have no problem with starting small. As long as there's constraints and limitations for the first few projects, I agree. Totally cool. And I would say, like, you'll be shocked at how fast you'll feel comfortable charging $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, and $5,000 when you're spending like 40 hours on a $500 project. Cause then you realize I could work at McDonald's and make more than I made on this website.
Yeah. And that's a good point, you know, and maybe just to encourage your listeners, even more, like, one success story that I really like about, there's a guy in my community, his name's Andy, and I still got the screenshot. You know, I actually interviewed him for a case study. And he shared, he's like, guys, I made $100 MRR. He was focusing on the subscription model right from the start, focusing on, like, I think it was like dumpster rental companies or something local, right? Focusing on local SEO and website and all that. And he shared it. And I think it was like literally in 8 months. Okay, so 3 months later, he was at 1,000. Within 8 months, he was at 10,000. And now he's over 50K.
Monthly recurring income? Yeah,
per month. And it's amazing seeing that progression. But the thing is, if he went out trying to sell like 10K plus websites, he wouldn't be where he is now. Mm-hmm. He literally sold 100 and then eventually after 1,000, screw this. I need to increase my pricing from 100 to like 250 now. And now he's only offering like $1,000 packages now. But only why? Because of the confidence and results.
Yeah, the quick wins kind of thing. And little project that you do well, that adds up, it all compounds. And then eventually, you're like, I'm never doing anything under 5K at some point. It can take a little while to get there. Luckily, it doesn't need to take too long though. If you are in a spot where you need to get cash in quick, that is where having a community, having courses and a proven plan of action is the way to go. And the subscription model, like that's a longer game approach. I mean, it sounds like Andy went pretty fast with his, but in most cases, especially with a low end maintenance plan, it takes a while to get to where you're making a decent amount of money with subscriptions. But I kind of like, that's why I like the hybrid. I like having bigger one-off projects with subscriptions, both growth and marketing oriented and like standard care. I think it's a really powerful trio. But to the point, man, there's so many ways to go about it. And I mean, pricing is going to evolve. I think everyone who starts out feels like an imposter because you are like, you don't know the industry, but you don't know the tools that well. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, but you don't have to stay there too long. If I started using Wix Studio, I would be an imposter because I don't know the tool at all. I've never logged in. Nothing against it. I don't know. Like that. I don't know. I feel like people need to give themselves grace with feeling like an imposter because of course, like somebody who could be an expert in one thing is going to be a complete imposter when they start something new. And there's nothing wrong with that. The goal is just to, learn a little bit, have some fun, and then suddenly you won't be an imposter anymore.
And that's the definition of learning. If it wasn't new, you wouldn't be learning it. So I think you're right. I think people are too hard on themselves at the beginning stages, and the reality is it takes long. I always say like 1 to 2 years of your freelancing business is really a grind. It's only after like the 3 years plus where you really start cooking, get a lot of referral clients, and really start scaling. Obviously, there's exceptions. People can do it in six months, 3 months, and everything. But generally speaking, it does take time. It's not like those quick get rich quick schemes where you can be earning 10K a month within 3 months. So I think expectation wise, it's important.
Yeah, there's so many variables there. I mean, you could, but a lot of that depends on too your experience leading up to this. Are you comfortable with sales? Are you comfortable with networking? Are you comfortable with making an offer? That's gonna, if you're like brand new to business and you've never been a business owner, it will take a little bit longer. It also depends too on timing and season of life. I mentioned my student Sam a little bit ago. He has been in pro coming from a different industry for just a year, almost exactly now. Last month, he had his first 13K month a year in. Amazing rock star member, but he is the exception. Like he is somebody who also quit his job to go full-time web design in the beginning, but he's also in a place where he could do it financially and he doesn't have a family yet. So like he has the time to devote and he's going ham. And I mean, he's been a total rock star this year, but I get that that's not going to be the case for everybody. And I think the 1 to 2 year window, I think is a good frame, depending on the situation, that's a good probably time estimate there. But again, it depends on what you want to make. Like if you want to make six figures, I think 2 years is very reasonable to get to that point with at least what I have in pro. That's so I feel comfortable telling students they could hit that. If you need to get in a year, we're gonna have some work to do, or you're going to need to be in a place where you feel really good about sales. Or if you have an existing skill set with marketing, design, whatever it is, I think that's where,
That's a good
point. That's where that's a little tough. But I agree with you.
I agree.
I was just looking through, speaking of the screenshot, Sam posted a comment. I wanted to read it out loud here. I hope he's cool with this. I'm sure he will be. hold on a sec. Here we go. So Sam said, and I'm just saying this to give everyone a reasonable expectation with getting to like a 13K month within a year. Cause we had a new member join just today actually. And Sam popped in and said, I joined pro back in January, 2023, way before I should have. I'm sure every newbie feels like that. I was still working a full-time job and had no place being among these pros. Remember even asking Josh if my site looked good, but Josh and the pros helped me lift it up quickly. Left my job in May with zero paying clients, hustled to keep the bills going for the last 7 months of 2023. And now in 2024, he said, I've been asking Josh how I can hire subcontractors.
Love that.
He is literally made. I mean, the thing with Sam, what's interesting, and I'm just sharing this little case study because it's It's exactly what happens when you hustle and work really hard for a little while is, yeah, the first like 5 or 6 months, he had a couple good waves, but then he had some down months and down times. And that is, I'm sure you will back me up and say it's so common. Like you'll have you'll have a couple good months and you'll feel really good. And the next month, like nothing's coming in and you're like, oh my God, what did I do? What am I doing wrong? What's happening? That is literally everyone's story. It happened to me, everyone I've talked to, you're agreeing. Everyone's story. But if you keep at it, it starts to compound. And then pretty quickly, I mean, in Sam's case, it was less than a year. He's hiring subcontractors in less than a year and he's on his way to six figures. That's odd, like, that's wild, but you do have to see it through that like dip that comes after the initial momentum, I feel like.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put a cap on this one, man. Because go ahead, Kyle, but yeah, that's a really important message.
Yeah. And I mean, I just wanted to highlight, like, persistence is truly underrated. You know, I mean, I think it was like within the first year, there was really a time when I almost gave up freelancing when I was like, man, it's just too hectic. It's not worth it. Maybe I'm a failure. It's not going to work out. It's too risky. All of this type of stuff. And I'm glad I stuck it out, you know, and it's amazing, you know, when I have these conversations with people, you know, to really keep going and persist, you know. Very often, 6 months later, a year later, they're like, man, thank you for that extra push, you know. And I think it's so important. Just give that extra push, give it an honest attempt, at least for a year, and see if it works, you know. I think good things could potentially come from it.
Real quick, when did it turn around for you? When you went through that low point, how far along were you when you were like, okay, we're good, I can do this, or you felt that confidence come back?
Yeah, I would say probably 18 months, a year and a half in, when I was like, man, okay, I'm onto something. I don't have the answers yet, but I can see I just need to keep going. And I think it was like, but after like the first, after starting for like the first 7-8 months, it was hard, you know? And I'm glad I pushed through and I encourage others to also do it.
Hell yeah, dude. All right, Kyle. Well, this has been great, man. Hey, well, tell us where we should go. You have the freelancefam.com. We'll, of course, link that. Is that where you want people to go after this? Where should everyone go to connect with you and join your community?
Yeah, that'll be amazing. So the community is freelancefam.com, and I'll be there, happy to help. And also any other links and everything is under my personal name, kyleprinsloo.com. And yeah, that's it from us. But thank you so much, Josh. Really,
yeah, man. It. And I'll make sure we link your agency startup Starship too. Cause I checked out the pricing on that. That's a good look for anyone who's curious about how you're doing your retainers. So yeah, we'll have that linked up, your personal site, and then Freelance Fam, that Freelance Fam is the Discord channel, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Cool. Yeah. I always like to know what communities are built on so everyone knows what to expect. So awesome. Cool. Kyle. Well, dude, thanks for your time, man. This has been a blast. If I'm ever down in South Africa, if you're up in the States, hit me up. We'll play some tennis. How's that sound, dude?
I like it. That sounds
How's your
awesome.
Serve, Thank by you, the way? How's your serve?
It's better than average.
Okay. You might get me.
How's
then.
Yours?
I have a pretty wicked first. Well, it's been a few years since I played, so I had to shake off some rust. I have a pretty wicked first serve. My second serve sucks, though.
Okay.
Actually, my backhand's better than my forehand, believe it or not. Yeah, like I can crush a backhand. That's super consistent. But my forehand.
Are you two-handed backhand or one-handed?
Two-handed. Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm looking forward to
it. I tried the one hand. I can't do it. I just.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it feels so unnatural for me.
I used to start two-handed, but now I do one-handed.
I wish I could do one-handed. I feel like it looks cool. Like you feel like Federer. You got like the Federer hair too, so it's probably blowing in the wind with your nice one-handed backhand with your sweat, you know, your headband on. But I would love to try. Maybe when I get back to it, I'll give it a go. But yeah, I'm a two-handed guy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, cheers, Kyle. Thanks, dude. I appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed that one, friends. I thought that was a really great approach. I've actually never heard somebody so practically and tactfully lay out their value ladder as a web designer. And there's no right or wrong way to do it, but obviously it worked for Kyle and it's worked. I've seen similar approaches to a lot of my students and members in my community, Web Designer Pro, who start out with an audit or a consultation or an optimization type video, something like that, just to show that you can be trusted. And even if you're not an established web designer, that You look like the expert in your field, even if you just give a few tips. So I'd highly recommend trying this out. If it's something for free, you have absolutely nothing to lose. And even if it's very low cost, if it's like a $29 audit or something, it's very low risk and it's a great way to test the waters. And you can always turn on and off your value ladder approach, like if you have a lead generator. So don't feel like if you create a free audit that you're going to be doing it forever. Just try it out. Offer it for a few months. See if it helps get some clients through the door. And then you can always turn it off if you need to once the business starts rolling in. Again, check out Kyle at his free web design freelancer community, freelancefam.com, which is a private Discord community. It is free, so you can join that. And the rest of the links and show notes that we mentioned are at joshhall.co/318. Hope you enjoyed this one, friends. Hey, if you get a value ladder of your own set up, sorry, I sounded like my family from Jersey there. If you get your own value ladder set up, send me an email. Comment if you would at the show notes for this episode, joshhall.co/318. I would love to see your value ladder. I do read all the comments that come in for the podcast. All right, friends, see you on the next episode.